Hello, and welcome to Pod Catalyst. My name is Peter Finn, the Executive Director at IABC, or International Association of Business Communicators. And today I had a chance to speak with Chris Lee, who is the Vice President of Communications for Gallagher's Employee Communication and Employee Experience Practice in Canada. He's an expert in building brands that stand out and achieve a purpose. He's a regular speaker at industry events, including IFEBP, HRPA, Conference Board of Canada, several others. He'll actually be a featured speaker at this year's IBC World Conference in Toronto, which I hope you'll join us at. But I got a chance to talk with Chris because last year I actually spoke with Chris about the State of the Sector report that Gallagher puts out, and I had the pleasure to speak with him again about this year's report. And for those that are not familiar with the annual report, it looks at the global internal communication trends, covers a lot of insights on budgets and the team size, as well as the different communication channels, technology that's being used, and so on. It's a very robust report. There's a ton in there, and Chris and I could probably have talked for several hours about it. But this year's report surveyed more than 2,000 communication and HR leaders. Some really interesting stuff. I think you'll enjoy the interview and really appreciate Chris's time. So I am joined again by Chris Lee. For those that regularly listen to Pod Catalyst, I interviewed Chris last year to talk about Gallagher's State of the Sector report. And Chris has graciously accepted our invitation to again talk about the updated or this year's State of the Sector report. So Chris, thanks so much for joining us again.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Peter.
And I just remember the conversation being really, really helpful for me because the report has a ton in there. But maybe the best place to start is just, what do you think is the most notable in terms of the findings that you saw in this report, maybe versus last year, and just a broad kind of summary of that?
Yeah, Peter, I think one of the things, and you mentioned it best, that there's a lot of things in the state of this sector and a lot of really interesting insights that communications professionals can take advantage of. But one of the things that really stood out this year was that communicators have singled out culture and belonging as a real priority. Mm-hmm. And this is not new, but this year there was 74% saying that it's the main purpose of internal communication. And this is likely the result of a combination of factors. Namely, for years, there's been a shift over, I'd say, the past decade at least, in terms of how organizations are considering their relationship with employees. So sometimes when I think about human resources, I see that there's a stronger balance being struck between viewing employees as just resources and supporting them more as humans. And today, the modern leader has evolved from, a top-down command and control decision maker to what MIT Sloan has called this emerging breed of leadership. And we all know what this kind of leader looks like. She is purpose-driven, empathetic, and an inclusive leader with a high EQ. Another element of culture has to do with how people actually work, particularly knowledge-based and desk-based roles where remote and hybrid working is now possible. And I've seen a rise in the evolution of the ways that we've worked for some time now, well before the pandemic. I think it started over maybe the past decade or two with the rise of agile workplaces and a move away from permanent workstations and walled offices. And a little bit more recently, you'll see that tech companies have started to introduce the concept of unlimited vacation. Yeah. And more recently, there's been a groundswell of support emerging for the benefits of a four-day work week. And Peter, all of this is to say that there might be more potential for a results-only work environment, or as some people call it with the acronym RO, where there's less emphasis on where you work and when you work and the number of hours and more emphasis on the outcomes and the quality of those outcomes. And then the one last element of culture that's been gaining momentum is in the area of psychological safety and the impact that this can have on fostering an improved culture. So psychological safety has to do less with mental health and more to do with the broader sense of constructive risk-taking. And I think psychological safety to me is more representative of big C communications as opposed to small C communications, mm-hmm. where it's really about empowering people to say what they really think, as long as it's in a positive and constructive way. So Amy Edmondson at Harvard talks about it as feeling safe to bring up innovative thoughts without fear of reprisal or speaking up when someone senior says something that makes you feel uncomfortable, or showing up as your authentic self. And it's not meant to be a shield from unaccountability or a culture of coddling and niceness. It's about feeling free to share constructive thoughts and behaviors, raise concerns, and challenge the status quo. And psychological safety, in my opinion, should really be the bedrock of an organization that desires to be more inclusive. And what all of this means for us as communicators is that it's just so important to stay in tune with the changing dynamic of what modern workplace culture looks like and where it's headed. And in this way, we can be relied upon even more so to play a substantial role in forming strategy at leadership levels.
Yeah, it's interesting. Some of that makes me think of like what's happened with Twitter over the last several months, you know, as sort of the antithesis of that, where it seems to be there's reprisal for if one sort of speaks out. But, and I guess that's leading my question, if you had insight on industries that are maybe more progressive than others in terms of the, you know, valuing psychological safety and those really being values of maybe, does it cut across all industries or do you see any trends?
I think, interestingly, larger organizations and enterprise-level organizations, what's happening with psychological safety is it's become a bit of a topic du jour, and a lot of leaders want to explore what psychological safety looks like, and in some cases without quite knowing what they're signing up for. And they just know that it's something that is starting to cause waves across the corporate industry. And so I think it's interesting that they're looking at this, but really what psychological safety is turning the lens back on leadership and the kind of leadership that you're trying to foster so that leaders are aware that employees and the relationship they have with employees, as I was mentioning earlier, that dynamic has changed quite a bit. And it's less about looking at leaders as order givers and employees as order takers, and a little bit more, Peter, about looking at employees as having a small part of accountability within an organization and leaders with a larger part of accountability within an organization. And this idea of results-only work environments would yield employees who have a little bit more ownership around their pocket of what the organization on a broader scale is trying to do. So what it is it's really in service of creating a workplace filled with miniature entrepreneurs and leaders giving people an ability to say, you know, it's not about 9 to 5 and Monday to Friday. Peter, I want you to do X, Y, and Z. And that's the only thing we're going to talk about. I'm not going to talk about when you do it or where you do it, but we will be talking about the outcomes and we will talk about the quality of the delivery of those outcomes. Yep. And that's pretty much it. And so it's an exciting time to be in a corporate structure. And I think the larger organizations are seeing that, whereas smaller organizations tend to have less of a viewpoint or a way of looking at how organizations look at these kinds of things. And psychological safety is just either you have a leader with high EQ or you don't.
Yeah.
And so it is exciting. I think it's really an exciting area right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about, you know, just the role of the communicator and how, you know, as with many roles within an organization continue to evolve, but, you know, as practitioners in this space, is there something that struck you from the results that said, okay, well, we're starting to see an evolution, you know, some things have changed over the last year from, you know, when the last time we did the survey?
Yeah, I think one of the things with a lot of leaders is, you know, when you talk about what are the things that are important to them, what's been happening a lot now is, I think when I talk about the psychological safety, one of the things that we look at is, what does it look like to support an inclusive environment and this area of diversity and inclusion? And it is really important. And I think one of the things that struck me as interesting is in the state of the sector, diversity and inclusion, there was only 40% of respondents that felt that they had a clear strategy around that. And I think there's a really big opportunity for companies to go beyond DEI as a box checking initiative and have it reflected more in what and how they show up as a diverse and inclusive organization. And to me, this is the critical jumping off point to go from what sometimes people think about as performative communication hallmarks and tokenism to how we can look to better democratize internal communication so that every person and group within an organization has a chance to have a voice. So this doesn't mean collaboration channels and just social media, but it also means being intentional about how to build things like employee resource groups as an important advisory channel for leadership, as an example. And I definitely think there's room for honest and transparent dialogue with employees about where you're at with diversity and what specifically you plan to do to grow and evolve, as opposed to vague visionary statements about the desire to be inclusive. I think actions speak louder than words. And it does, it reminds me of, Peter, by way of example, in a former role of mine, I was asked to review a speech that the president was making at an AGM. And the original speech, and this was around the time of the George Floyd incident. Yep. And the original speech featured the line, "We support Black Lives Matter," which is a great thing to say. But I challenged the point of making this statement as opposed to, why don't we focus on describing exactly how we support this important movement? What are the initiatives that we've sponsored or contributions that we've made to show our support? And I think from a communication standpoint, that's much more powerful than simply saying the words. And I think this yields for a much more powerful message.
I mean, do you think that organizations have held off on maybe having a clear strategy because there's thinking that maybe it's become too politicized, or, you know, because they don't want to make certain statements? You know, I mean, I know, especially in the US, I mean, there, you've seen that, you know, maybe what some people might call corporate activism or whatever, is then there's a state level response. Or, but I mean, do you think that there's, not to say companies or organizations keep it fuzzy, but that they're worried about the sort of backlash? And, you know, to do something maybe more performative, you know, is a lot easier than to say, as you say, like, here are the five things that we're doing as a company or as an organization to move the needle.
Yeah, it is. It's a really great point, Peter. And I think that sensitivity is, it's part of our reality right now. And I think organizations have to be careful about how they talk to really any topic. Yeah. But I think it is important for organizations to be part of that conversation, so that they can not only manage their part and their role in the conversation, but to your point about taking a safe route, I think there needs to be a balance. I think organizations have to be careful about what they talk about, but are they able to communicate in a way that feels meaningful to their audiences, especially their employees, because their employees are the ones that want to be more and more a part of an organization that they believe in, that align with their own values. And so I think, Peter, the importance for an organization to develop a stance is really important. It is a very sensitive environment, but at the same time, it's important for organizations to be mindful of what is their role and what can they do to be part of the solution in a lot of cases.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it sort of segues into, you know, what else, you know, the other topic, which is, you know, ESG, because there's the data point there that it's like 36% of communicators said they don't do any form of communication around it. Small to medium organizations saying that there's really not a lot being done around ESG with many different organizations, I guess, were surveyed. So do you expect that there will be growth in this area? I mean, and I know just from using an IABC lens, you know, as an association, there's just been increasing focus on ESG in terms of the, you know, some of the programming we've been doing. And I just see it on the rise. But I mean, what are your feelings about the trend and what are you saying? Because I think, you know, again, to go back to the US, you know, there's some states that are almost actively working against ESG. But just what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think ESG communications it's a powerful way to showcase your organization's values and your commitment as a responsible corporate citizen in the name of sustainability. And I think within an employer's walls, this becomes a really important way to effectively connect your employees to purpose when you're clear about what you stand for. And, you know, as we're talking about having values that align to theirs. And I think with each successive generation, it just gets more and more important as employees start to declare what they want to be part of, how do they want to spend their time. and in some cases are willing to make trade-offs in other ways to make sure that they're, you know, spending time with an organization that aligns with their values. And, you know, at the end of the day, Peter, I think employees simply feel better when they know that they're part of a company that's trying hard to do the right things and not just doing things for the sake of making profits. And I think it's always an important piece of this. And I think ESG communications and just being obvious about showcasing what it is that you're doing to support ESG, I think is always going to be important for organizations.
Yeah. And I mean, I think also just, you know, how it aligns with your customers. And I mean, I'm sure that also, I mean, beyond just internal communications, but, you know, the how you are speaking to your customers, you know, what is your, you know, your sort of the brand implications and all
of that. And actually, Peter, one of the points of research, not from the state of the sector, but from other research that I've seen, suggests that customers want to patronize organizations that are not only have values that align with theirs, but more and more customers also want to patronize organizations that clearly make their employees a priority and take care of them. So I think more and more customers are voting with their dollars. And employees likewise are voting with, you know, who they decide that they want to be employed by. And so these aren't things anymore that are things that an organization just adds to the overall list of things that they want to do. I think it becomes part of the fabric of who you are as an organization. It becomes an investment. It becomes things that you have to dedicate resources to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah. I'd love to. If you have the research that you're talking about, I'd love to see it, because I mean I've heard very similar things, but it's, you know, that's a really interesting perspective. So the other thing, another piece of the report said, really looked like a fairly low percentage, like 26% are open to using creativity and humor in communications, but at the same time 74% believe internal comms supports culture and belonging. You know, is there an opportunity to kind of close the gap there? I mean, it seems like the use of humor and is a nice way, probably a little bit more eye-catching too, when things seem very transactional. But I mean, I guess I was just curious. I mean, could this help with issues around disengaged employees? You know, just maybe crafting these things a little bit different than how they've been done in the past, especially through the use of humor.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about, you know, the use of communications to build culture, and of course, it's extremely important. But I don't know, Peter, to be honest, I'm not sure that creativity and humor is necessarily the only way to achieve culture. I think creativity generally serves as an important way to, as you mentioned, you know, catch someone's eye.
Yeah.
But I feel like the true mark of effective creative is in how it actually helps to change behaviors and shape attitudes and then ultimately culture. And I think to create a strong culture, every communicator needs to be really planful and focused on what kind of culture are we trying to build here, and then being very consistent about how it is that we communicate it. And I think with consistency and repetition, you've got a chance to move the needle on this. And, you know, having said all this, I think I need to stress the importance of having the right insights about your audience and your employees. So, you know, you really need to know and need to know really well where your organization is at and how employees feel coming into a communication on a given topic. Because the last thing you want to do is communicate in a way to a group of embattled employees with low morale in a way that does come across as, you know, a toxic positivity or being a Pollyanna. And I think, you know, I always talk about this. It always runs the risk of coming across as disingenuous and out of touch. And it's easy to forget that employees generally are extremely good at smelling a spin.
Yes.
So yeah. I think all of these will compromise the most important things that you want to hold near and dear as a communications professional, which is you don't want to compromise the level of trust that your employees have in you, and you don't want to have anything like a spin undermine your credibility. So the other thing that you touched on that I wanted to bring up a point about is the importance of tone in communications. And I do love humor. I mean, humor is certainly, it's a great way to create levity in communications, But it's actually much harder to do effectively for large audiences.
Yeah, than everyone I think has a different sense of humor, right? So.
For sure. And sometimes I, you know, it's funny, Peter, sometimes I think about speakers at conferences who will show a slide with a comic on it, and then invariably they'll pause for effect, anticipating a wave of raucous laughter. And
yeah.
I have to be honest, I don't think I've ever seen it in 25 years. It's always, you know, there's always one that has the comic, but it doesn't usually get that effect. And I think instead of humor, I think the biggest opportunity for communicators is to strive to establish a tone that is, and a voice that is light, relatable, and honest. And I've seen communicators often want to communicate, for example, using very formal language, but this can really work against efforts to create an open and honest climate in a workplace. And I think instead of only focusing on the accuracy of a message, the communicators can and really should play a proactive role in creating a message that not just informs, but truly resonates with people, leading to more of a chance that their behaviors and attitudes and culture will change.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess the other thing too, I was thinking about is maybe the use of story to kind of, you know, things communicated within the framework of like a employee stories, you know, and it can be used in a lot of different ways, but I mean, is that, you know, something that is relatable, something that is, you know, authentic, you know, something that is like, people that are grounded in this culture. I mean, that, have you seen, I mean, it seems like that is also fairly effective in illustrating different points.
For sure. And I really couldn't agree more with that, Peter. And I think it's, you know, as we talk about that democratization of communications, there's no more credible voice in the organization than your peers within the ranks of employees. Because I think anytime messaging comes from C-suite, it's generally understood by employees that this was well-crafted and, you know, maybe there was a communications person involved.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if you look at B2C external marketing, they use influencers in a lot of situations to help tell the story. So it's, you know, if you've got a product or something that you want to talk about, it's more meaningful coming from somebody who is not part of the organization and doesn't have an obvious vested interest in what you're saying. So it's one of those, you know, don't take my word for it. It's really gives you an opportunity to identify those employees within an organization that can help you communicate things across an organization in a meaningful and relatable way.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is, that I want to ask you about is just, people have different opinions on this, but you know, some people think we're coming into a recession or there won't be a recession. But I think the fact of the matter is, like, you know, especially in tech, I mean, there's been, you know, layoffs, and you know, we may see a scarcity of resources. I think in the report there was, you know, mention of a lack of budget. And I also saw that one of the takeaways, you know, are we, you know, kind of going back to the days of being able to quantify or, you know, put a quantitative measure of the ROI of, you know, comms efforts. But any thoughts on, you know, as kind of enter new phases of the economy and, you know, how communicators can advocate for themselves, the work that they do? You know, I'd also noted in the report is sort of the golden age of communications, you know, with COVID and these things that, you know, the communicator really was leaned upon to really, you know, steer the organization and variety of different ways, you know, working with corporate leadership. But I guess, you know, where we are now and kind of the year ahead, I mean, do you have any insight on that, just in terms of advocating for the important role that communication practitioners play within an organization?
Yeah, and I love what you're saying, Peter, about this momentum that communicators have now built to be at the table with leadership as a strategic advisor. And I one of the things that I think is so important now for us is, you know, in a period where we might be faced with limited resources, I think it can be very tempting to go back on old habits where we do what I sort of talked about earlier about as being small C communications, meaning that, you know, the focus is on taking the order, making sure the language is accurate, grammatically sound with no errors and typos. And one of the things that I always go back to with my clients is this idea that, you know, having effective communications, it doesn't always require a substantial budget for copywriters and graphic designers or agencies to be involved, but it does mean taking that time to communicate in relevant ways and being thoughtful and deliberate with each communication touch point. And I don't think it's actually as hard as it sounds. I think when communications professionals are faced with a seemingly untenable amount of things to get to, I think it just means we have to double down on the intention. And sometimes even a 5-minute brainstorm can do wonders to open up ideas about how can we really reach people with this communication. You know, the other piece to this in our role as strategic advisors is, you know, just reminding leadership that every single initiative, investment, everything that an organization does often is only as good as how effectively it is that you communicate this. And this is really a big part of your business case to leadership for making the investment. And Peter, I'm reminded, you know, something you said just sparked this memory of mine, but a long time ago, I had a client who invested heavily in creating a new compensation framework for their employees. And it was all good news. They did the work to benchmark pay against the industry to make sure that people were being competitively paid. They created transparent pay bands so that people could see clearly their own opportunities for growth and pay decisions that could be made more consistently and fairly. They gave pay raises to those people who are below the new salary bands that they were in. So, of course, this is all great news. It represented a huge investment in their employees. But I think the error in judgment that they made was that it was the total rewards team within the organization that decided to communicate this themselves. And a number of things went wrong, but, you know, long story short, I mean, they communicated it, for example, at the same time as they communicated it to their people managers, and they had no ability to answer questions that their team members had. So they were caught off guard. They didn't have separate strategies for different pockets of employees that might have been impacted in different ways. So, for example, I mentioned some of the employees getting raises because they were below a minimum salary level in these new pay bands. There was no anticipation that they would be actually upset because they had the sense that they were being underpaid all along and they're only now getting the raise to the bottom because they were being undervalued. And so it was a lot of things. I mean, there was people with similar titles, but were slotted into different job bands. And because they wanted to be transparent, it led to embarrassment and other questions that people were not prepared to answer. So in the end, what really should have been a good news story on a big investment ended up being a point of great dissatisfaction and damage to morale. And ultimately, for us as communicators, when we talk to leadership, it's that constant reminder, communication matters. It's not just about making things look great, but it's thinking about our role as effective stewards of information, especially when it should be a positive thing. And I think, you know, this is the thing, I think leadership always has to remember and understand that the communication itself is just as important in so many cases as the initiatives and investments that they make themselves.
Yeah, that's a great point. So, I mean, kind of just as a kind of summarizing, or maybe like kind of look at it as like maybe key, you know, three key things from the report. If someone was just starting, you know, their position as the director of comms at some organization and they were to review this, I mean, would you advise them as the things that are, you know, to really kind of take away from this that they would be able to action on, you know, throughout the year, or, you know, that they, you know, would be part of their success through the year as, you know, leading their comms team or being a member of the team?
Yeah, definitely. Peter, I think one of the themes that we've been chatting about for the last few minutes is, I'd say the first thing is for us to be looked on as strategic advisors. One of the first things I'd say is metrics, hard data. This is the love language of the C-suite. And I would strongly encourage communicators to use tools like Gallagher's State of the Sector as important proof points to help validate to leadership, you know, either, you know, what things you might need as a communicator or to help them understand where your organization might be at relative to other organizations. So, for example, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about budgets. On page 45 of the report, there's data on what other organizations are spending on communications. It's broken down by region as well as company size. There's also data about the team size for internal communications broken down by size of organization. So I just think it's just arming yourself with the right data points is some of the kinds of things that really help rattle loose if it's budgets or if it's more resources on your team that you need. I think that's one of the areas I look at. Second, and I guess it's kind of related to this first point, is I'd encourage everybody to think about how you might be able to build a business case for investing in internal communications technology. So we spend a lot of the state of the sector talking about technology, and nearly half of our respondents indicated that they were not investing enough in technology. And I think having the right technology, it not only lends itself to a better employee experience, you know, that starts to approach consumer grade experience, but more importantly, it can actually reduce the reliance on people and manual efforts to communicate. So just as an example, there's a client that we're working on where we are rolling out a platform that can time the onboarding communications and training to people based on their start date, as opposed to having people managers manually trying to keep track and trying to remember, oh, this person started, you know, last month, I have to remember to send them on this course, that kind of a thing. And so I think it's just taking a look at what does that ideal tech stack look like within the walls of your organization. And then, Peter, the third thing I'd say that is an area that's worth spending meaningful time on, whether it's through a task force or a committee, I think it's developing a standard for an internal voice that is consistent across all internal communications. So not just for corporate communications, but, you know, when I look at, we touched a little bit on some of the lessons learned from B2C, I think it should be foundational for B2E communications to have a consistent voice across all. So whether your communications are coming from operations, IT, HR, or leadership, I think there's strength in having every part of the organization singing from that same songbook with a similar tone of voice and look and feel. And too often there's larger organizations where it feels like it's fractured. It's clear that the language coming from IT or operations is different from HR and it's different from leadership. And so in the years that I've had experience working on creating brands, this is the first thing that you have to look at, is creating that strong, consistent internal voice, which will ultimately lead to a more focused and clear culture and brand.
So for lack of a better term, would this be kind of like akin to like a style guide for what your voice, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's a style guide. It's just a way of doing things. And, you know, sometimes people think a style guide is rigid, but it's just a way of laying out the ground rules for this is who we want to be and this is how we want to come across to everybody. And when we're all doing this together, we have a chance to create a special and strong bond with our employees, as opposed to having fractured voices across the organization.
I had another question for you, and that is, do you think that there's less information fatigue within organizations now, or has it gotten worse, or what's your— I mean, I think it's something you heard, you know, just especially during COVID. I mean, there was just there was a lot of communications probably about a lot of different things. But I mean, is that's also going to make the job of the communicator very, very challenging? And, you know, just so many channels. And I think you were talking about the tech, you know, helping out with some of that. But is that something you still see? Is that happening, you know, as a kind of a general theme, that people are just getting so much information, it's hard to really for them to get what they need? Or they're just not paying attention, maybe to some degree.
Yeah, I think organizations that aren't as diverse with their channel strategy tend to rely on, more often than not, on one channel of communication. So, I mean, the obvious one that we talk about, and it's far and away the highest channel that's used, is email, which is a top-down, one-to-many broadcast channel. And so even though it's number one in terms of usage, it falls way further down the line in terms of its effectiveness. And that the reason is because it's relied upon too heavily for every kind of communication. So it becomes this hourglass kind of a piece. And your inbox effectively becomes this triage unit. And for most employees, it becomes really, really hard because they have to prioritize what messages that they can get to. And often there's a lot of messaging that's important that gets lost in the shuffle, because usually in the triage unit, the kinds of things that employees will get to are things either that are coming from their manager or from their customers, and then important HR messages or other types of corporate messaging tend to be triaged much lower in that ladder. And so it's I think it's really important that organizations are thoughtful, not only about the over-reliance on too few communications channels, but then also being thoughtful about how to structure a message. I think an email can be perfectly effective for any number of things, but you know, this is a book that's being judged by its cover. You can't assume that someone's going to read it from end to end and every single employee is going to look at it. So when you look at the structure of an email, just as an example, Peter, I'd say, you know, you want to break it down into chunks, but also create a hierarchy of information. And so what is the one piece of real estate that everybody looks at? And I always remind a lot of communicators, including on our team, about the invaluable real estate that's the subject line, because the subject line is actually the thing that has a chance to reach almost everybody in your organization. Even if they don't open your email, you have a chance to share some really important information in the subject line. And so you think about, what is the purpose of the subject line? You can inform, and so make sure there's a vital piece of information there, or you can get them to, I need them to open. That's the purpose of the subject line. So it's really being thoughtful, and often all the attention and focus and energy is on the body of the email and the attachment or link that it goes to. And then people forget, oh, you know what? We need a subject line. What can we put up there? And I think it's about being thoughtful. And then within the body of the email, similar structure and setup, which is you can't assume they're going to read the entire email, but they will look at, if you chunk it out in a way that feels logical with large, clear subheads, that in and of itself becomes a really important, it's almost like having a summary sheet of what do you need to know? Well, if you don't read the whole email, I just need you to need to know these four things. And these are the four things that are captured in the subheads. And then of course, if you're lucky, they'll read it, they'll click on the attachment, that sort of thing. So I think a lot of it is about structuring the content and reminding ourselves that not everyone's going to read it, but I think we need to be respectful of their time and their experience to at least give them the executive level summary. I think the executive summary is not just for executives. The reality is the vast majority of employees are time poor, and so we need to be able to give them some choices and also organize information in a way so that they can consume it the way that they want to consume it.
Yeah. No, that's I've gotten a few things where I feel like the lead is buried in the middle of the email. So that's really interesting. So I have one last question for you, Chris. We asked you this last year, so I'm not going to ask you again, but we typically ask our guests, you know, what gets you up in the morning? So I was going to ask you, what are you excited about for this year? And we're still relatively new in the year. And you could say this could be about your work or not or whatever, but like, what's exciting about this year for you?
I think we touched on it a little bit earlier, Peter. I think what I get really, really excited about, and it also happens to be the thing that gets me up in the morning, is you think about the kind of work that we get a chance to do. And for me, I love this idea that we're getting smarter and smarter about how can we create a great and meaningful experience for employees. Because everything we do at Gallagher is about the employee experience. And that's really what the State of the Sector explores, is what are some of the insights about how we help our clients create that bond with their employees. And ultimately, why it's exciting to me, and you know, we talked a little bit about results-only work environment. I think the number of employers that are going to be a little bit more courageous about how they approach their relationship with their employees, I think you're going to get more and more courageous employees looking to stretch it a little bit, whether it's flexible working, whether it's four-day work weeks, or whether it's that full-on idea of results-only work environments. Because at the end of the day, I think, you know, there actually is an opportunity for organizations to create experiences that become a draw for employees working elsewhere. Because honestly, I don't think working life should be such a comically poor experience that it's easy to parody on TV shows and comic strips. I think it should really, I really believe, maybe naively, that working life can be and should be something that people look forward to doing and are grateful to be part of. It should be awesome. There shouldn't be this idea of TGIF or those kinds of things. I think there is a chance for organizations that are willing to put in the effort and the investment and resources into creating something that people just love to do right across the board. So it's bigger than just communications. I think it's something that if we all do our part to try to do this and create special experiences, I think it could be awesome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think also just this overall societal impacts, you know, if you have people that are happy to be at work and find passion and, you know, around what they do, I mean, that's, I mean, it has a much larger impact than just the organization for sure. Well, thanks, Chris. This has been fantastic. I really, really appreciate your time. And I'm sure we could talk for a couple more hours about this. But yeah, I just want to thank you and, you know, thanks, and hopefully we'll get to do this again next year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks so much, Peter, for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks again to Chris. That was a great conversation. Really appreciated his insights on the report. And I just know that Chris is really active in the space and, you know, a real thought leader. So I really appreciate his time. And again, he'll be speaking at the World Conference this year in Toronto. For our next Pod Catalyst interview, speaking with Alex Seveny at McMaster University, he'll be a panelist at the World Conference on generative AI. So really looking forward to that discussion. AI is certainly a hot topic. So thanks so much.